Pitter patter.
Let's get at her.
Well, hey, Christy, how are you now?
Good, and you?
Not so bad. Welcome back to, what would this be, episode 8?
Yeah. Unless we want to call it holiday special, but I think that's confusing.
7.5.
There we go.
Episode 7.5 of our series where we're providing a thinking person's guide to Letterkenny.
Yes, indeed we are.
A Canadian television program of which we've become so fond.
Some may say obsessed.
Huh?
Yeah.
There's a touch of the obsession, perhaps.
A bit.
Yes. So, and a good one, though.
Yeah.
A healthy one, if there's such a thing.
Yeah.
Certainly not.
We haven't turned to degens.
Not yet. I'm not getting anybody's way. We're just doing our thing and trying to have a little fun in the process, share a little of our joy and what we appreciate about this show.
A few things we learn along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Have some drinks as we do it.
A few things we learned before that mm-hmm. may be applicable. And,
mm-hmm.
and even a few funny anecdotes if they apply.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, this episode is an interesting one because apparently it was crafted as a standalone when it initially originally aired in Canada. So it was between seasons 2 and 3.
Yeah.
As you found out from a little bit of internet research, it was bundled when it came to the States on Hulu as part of season 2.
Right. Which explains why it doesn't actually connect to the plot of season 2.
Yeah. Nor
not
really,
to the
nor really season 3.
Yeah.
You know, the resolutions of them in the beginning of season 3.
Right. Right.
So, yeah, it is a relatively standalone event centered on the holiday of St. Patrick's Day.
Yep.
And Letterkenny's celebration of that event. And as we learned at the beginning of this episode, the connection is somewhat obvious for the fact that apparently Letterkenny was founded by immigrants from Ireland.
Right. Feels apropos.
Yeah. Came over, as so many of them did, in the 1840s because of the potato famine.
Yeah. Not a good time.
No, it doesn't sound like a good time to be Irish. Probably better ones since
I think
but then was kind of a nadir of sorts for the old Irish. What's the numbers I've heard? As many as I think 4 million people.
You know, I don't remember. I mean, it was so long ago that I like learned about this in history, but that is a thing that we should know.
It was an astronomically large number of people that passed away as a result of the potato. And because it wasn't just a single event, it was a series of years.
Right,
That the blight affected them, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the things I can't help but share now, because it did come up in courses, discussions of this event and its history in one of my classes, is the fact that all the while that Ireland was having this famine and so many people were dying and being forced to emigrate all around the world, Ireland was a net exporter of food.
What? Was this due to England?
Right? They, because the English controlled the majority of the land and used it for agricultural production, they colonized it like they did so much of the world after that. And they were using that land, producing corn, and shipping it back home for English bellies. And the Irish, who were working this land and doing their own, you know, subsistence farming, largely on potato agriculture.
Yeah, yeah.
When the blight hit, they had nothing, and they couldn't afford to buy the corn. And
my gosh.
Yeah, they died.
I did not know that.
Died in their millions. Meanwhile, Ireland as a whole was exporting food.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
And not surprising because colonization.
Yeah.
The history of the relations between England and Ireland.
Yeah. Mm. No, and it's, you know, it is entirely of European colonization. It is entirely about Britain's actions in places like Ireland. You know, the other great example of that was the Bengal famine. That was during World War II. And there, I want to say, I mean, many more millions died, like 10 million people died in the Bengal famine because they were producing food and it was being exported also to the British Empire to support their war effort during World War II. Yeah, yeah, eerily reminiscent of one another.
Terrible.
A century apart, two very different places, but both the product of British colonization.
Well, yeah,
as you know,
one might say there's a pattern.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Exactly. So, hey, with that lighthearted point of departure, that now we're into it, so it is the holiday, St. Patrick's Day, as we come to Letterkenny, and it's the whole crew, the Hicks, that is in the produce stand, at the produce stand for the introduction. And they begin not with the traditional voiceover, signaling furthermore that this is a different
event. Yeah, a bit of a one-off.
Yeah. Yeah, instead they're having a round of drinks, and rather than having the, stereotypical Irish car bombs, they're drinking something that they call an Irish hand grenade. But before we go into what exactly that is, by comparison, have you ever had an Irish car bomb?
Well, so in Pittsburgh, we call them Boilermakers.
Well, I think those are technically slightly different.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I'm no great aficionado of any of these styles of drink, but I'm pretty sure that a Boilermaker is just a whiskey or some sort of liqueur dropped in a pint glass of beer.
Yeah.
But this is different. This is whiskey and what is the creamy?
The cream.
Yeah.
So the car bomb always has the cream also?
The way I understand it, yeah.
All these years, I haven't known. I thought an Irish car bomb was the same thing as a Boilermaker.
Yeah, I think they're basically the same, except
minus the cream.
Yeah, because furthermore, I think the Irish car bomb always is stout.
And a Boilermaker can be any type of beer.
Yeah.
I took that just that, Pittsburghers want to drink anything. There might not always be a stout on hand.
Right, yeah. So yeah, I'm just looking it up here now. And yeah, the way my understanding is, yeah, it's on the internets.
Yeah, what are you finding on the internets?
Undoubtedly reliable resources. It's Wikipedia, you can probably be reasonably confident to some degree.
Yeah.
It's Bailey's Irish Cream, Guinness, and Jameson Whiskey
Okay.
And that's probably its most branded version.
Right, and so it looks the same in terms of like shot glass in a pint glass, but what an Irish car bomb is actually quite different from just a Boilermaker. And I feel the need to apologize to Pittsburghers everywhere for not knowing that, because I feel like there are probably plenty of Pittsburghers right now who are like old school and are yelling at their phones, what, how do you not know the difference between a Boilermaker and an Irish car bomb, although they'd say it very differently because Pittsburghers, we have a bit of an accent.
I agree with that statement. If you said, if they said it virtually incomprehensible.
What you talking about?
And the only other problem with that statement you just made is that if they're that old school Pittsburghers, they don't do podcasts. So.
Oh, you're right. They don't. They're listening to cassettes.
Yeah. This book on tape is great. It's the newest technology.
It's the newest technology.
You'll be happy to hear, though. The Irish Car Bomb, Irish Slammer, Irish Bomb Shot, or Dublin Drop is a cocktail similar to a Boilermaker.
See that? Thank you, Wikipedia.
Mm-hmm.
I see the difference. Yep.
It's just whiskey in it.
Yeah. Beer. See, and that, to me, feels like home. Which is a disturbing thing to say out loud.
If Irish, you have those people.
I am not Irish.
That's not what I hear. I guess we got different information, but that's... I know you don't claim that, but the Boilermaker originated, it says here, in Butte, Montana, of all places.
No shit.
Just up the road from
I Meyer. Would have assumed that came from, I don't know, Germany. Because my dad's family all drank Boilermakers all the time. That was just what they drank.
I think they're called their Boilermaker there.
Touché.
Therein lies the difference, but it's easy to imagine.
As a German joke for those of you who are familiar with the language.
It's not hard to believe they might have had a similar one in the Teutonic nations.
Yeah.
Probably one of those things. It's not like it's a radical technology.
you don't think it's radical to drop a shot of whiskey in a pint of beer?
Yeah, I'm thinking it's probably...
You think every culture probably has some version of it?
Okay, speaking to this, love you, Wikipedia. Mm-hmm. Other pairings of shot and beer are possible. Traditional pairings include Herrengedeck gentleman's menu.
Ooh.
A German pairing of corn, which is grain brandy, and beer.
Oh, see?
Right.
Okay. Right. There we go. There's my German folk.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
all of this began by you asking me
if I've ever had one. Right, and the answer is
yes, and I have had Boilermakers.
Uh-huh.
Yes, in fact, the first time I had an Irish car bomb was when I was in grad school in Arizona, and my friend Nate convinced me on St. Patrick's Day that we should have car bombs, and I finished the drink, set it on the bar, stood up, ran outside, and, as our friends from Letterkenny would say, spit on the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm. Tossed a sidewalk pizza right there.
I tossed myself an Irish sidewalk pizza right there in Tempe, Arizona. Mm.
Yeah, probably not the only one who's done that.
Yeah, probably not. I have had them since, and they don't generally make me sick. I think it was more a combination of poor choices that day, so...
Yeah, but you could say that this drink is a poor choice in and of itself.
The stout, it's so heavy. Mm. And then to throw in cream with that. Ooh.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah. So, anyway, how about you?
No, I've never...
What?
No, I wouldn't.
But I just gave you this lovely description of why you should have them regularly.
Yeah, no, and I think I'm...
Really sold all of America on it.
I'm questioning all my choices till now, why I haven't partaken of this. No, it was a popular drink when I was in graduate school amongst some of the degens that I ran around with.
From up north.
But they were all undergrads on the ultimate frisbee team, and I always chalked it up to the fact that they were and remain degens to this day, as far as I know. But also because they were young men and they couldn't drink anything that wasn't super sweet. So they were
there's something about the college years that everyone has to drink those super sweet things.
Yes.
And right? And that's what gets you.
Oh, it's horrible. Yeah. I thought of mixing those, pairing any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes me think twice.
Yeah.
So no, I haven't had it either. And so they mentioned the Irish car bomb and Wayne, who's playing the role of Poopy Pants.
Yes.
This episode says that's offensive, which I assume he's alluding to the idea of the Irish car bomb.
Yeah, exactly.
As a term, right?
Yeah, I appreciate that he's like, wait, let's not be offensive to those who live through this.
Nobody pays attention to him.
No, they don't.
Anyway, they're drinking what they call Irish hand grenades, which is the same basic idea, but except rather than dropping it all into one glass, you apparently wedge the two shots in the rim of the pint glass, pull the whiskey from it as you would the pin from a hand grenade, shoot the whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, the Irish cream is falling into the beer.
Which is perfect.
Yeah, and then you drink the remainder down as a chaser, in essence. And
I appreciate the clever name, the hand grenade gesture that goes with it, and that it allows you a little time for that cream to get in with the stout. I think that's pretty genius. I mean,
you could almost do that.
Yeah.
More. It seems more comprehensible to me that you could shoot the whiskey. You know, provided it's decent whiskey, and then
have
the rest of the drink wouldn't go down so bad, right?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I like that. We should maybe try it someday. No, you're shaking your head. No, you're not going to do it.
No.
I'll try it with Megan. Yeah. She and I'll do one.
Yeah, she's a degen. So
me and her both.
Yes. You guys are a match pair there.
Yeah.
So they hoist one of those. Meanwhile, still referring to Wayne as St. Patrick's Poopy Pants.
Right, yep, St. Poopy Pants.
They mentioned they're going to the Ag Hall for the annual event. St. Patrick's Day, or St. Perfect's Day, as they tend to call it.
Yeah.
Therein that the event, the hockey boys are apparently going to be doing security, and the skids are going to be DJing. So the gang's pretty much all there, minus the natives at this.
Yeah, and no Gail or Glenn.
No, those players, you know, as we've noted before, they are the ones that seem to come in and out the most.
And they're not here for this.
Absent for episodes at a time, and then reappear magically and with too much fanfare and joy.
Exactly.
They bemoan the fact that Skids are DJing because the Ag Hall is
for agricultural music.
Yeah, exactly, but. Somebody isn't writing and has enough oversight.
No, McMurray is really falling down on the job of AgCol president.
Seems to be dropping the ball. You're right, yep. And Wayne, in his poopy pants mode, said the St. Patrick's Day should be about shit that St. Patrick's did, like driving the snakes out of Ireland, which then they promptly highlight was never an actual historical fact, but a metaphor for Christianity's driving out the Druid priests from Ireland.
Yeah, and right? He's very much seems to be on the side of St. Patrick and the side of Christianity doing that.
Yeah, because he refers to the Druid priests as eating babies.
Things about them. Which is just funny to me. I expect them to take a more secular view of it. Mm-hmm. And. It's funny to me. That stood out to me the first time we watched it, and then in our rescreening. I don't know.
Right. But ultimately, the scene ends, and the episode really kicks off with Wayne saying that, I guess, as long as everyone's having a good time, there's no reason to be a poopy pants.
That's right. And the theme of today's show.
Pretty much the abiding theme, you're right? Yeah. So that takes us to scene one, which is them getting into the truck, actually. The truck rolling up magically on cue.
Right, yeah.
To take them to this event, and it's driven by Seth, who we learned was actually part of the crew, an uncredited actor in this scene. But
is funny because the first time he rolls up, I was like, who is that? We've never seen that person. Mm-hmm. And then when he drops them off in the next scene, they say, thanks, Seth drove us home. And I wrote down Seth, but I'm like, who is Seth? Right. And then we found in research that he was a crew member, which is fun.
Union, and had to do the driving because union restrictions, which makes sense, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're off, and then just as soon as they're off, they're back.
Yeah.
And
7 a.m. the next day.
7 a.m. the next day after a great St. Perfect's Day.
Right. St. Perfect's Day.
Another round of beers they have. And then they begin to recount the events of the previous evening because apparently Derry can't remember any of it.
No.
And they're left to remind him of how he became a legend. Literally, how he became legendary.
Yes.
Yeah. Which that was too good that there was, they didn't leave that lying there. They picked it up and ran with
that
it.
That was
right?
good.
Yeah. Yep, and so they begin several episodes of description of how this came to pass.
Mm-hmm. How he became known as legendary.
Yeah, and we learn from almost immediately that Wayne didn't witness any of this stuff.
No, he misses all of the legend.
And as Wayne, or as Derry asked Wayne, what were you doing? He said, well, I was out having a dart lately.
Yep.
And that's where we cut to now in scene two, outside the Ag Hall with Wayne having a dart, McMurray joins him to belly quite vociferously about the D-gens.
Yeah,
the
D-gens from upcountry. Upset that they're there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And he can't hardly be tempered in his distaste for the D-gens. Wayne tries and ultimately leaves him with the previous point that if there ain't no reason to have poopy pants if people are having fun.
Yeah, if people are having fun, don't be poopy pants.
McMurray doesn't really buy it, and he goes in to find his wife and Bonnie, right? Yeah. Keep them safe from the DJs.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Inside, then, we cut to scene three, and we see the Skids on the DS being the DJs.
Clad
in green.
Doing their group dance.
Doing a little synchronized
dancing. Very coordinated.
Dancing.
Love it.
Yeah, all five of them. And quite well choreographed, you might argue. We see the hockey boys in their security yellow shirts starting to get hammered.
Oh, I feel start is a...
Already well into it.
Yes, there we go.
Lots of whiskey. Yeah,
a whole lot of...
Danger. So from that, we go scene four back to the produce stand where they... remind him that Derry, that he's a legend. Mm-hmm. And then they actually get into recounting how it came to pass. Back to the Ag Hall.
Yeah.
A lot of that, it's kind of hard to follow because it's a lot of back and forth between a sentence or two at the produce stand. An event at the Ag Hall and then back to the
produce stand. Yeah, a lot of flashback is utilized in this episode. So it's really just every other, you know, scene, but it's hard to even call them scenes because it's like a sentence or two.
Yeah.
So in this episode,
we'll call them scenes.
We'll call them scenes.
But they're kind of interspersed. Or interconnected.
So if you're keeping track of the scenes at home, know that our numbering might be different than yours.
Mm, yeah. And if it is, you're wrong. So this scene begins with, we see Derry at the Ag Hall dancing.
Mm-hmm.
Scene five, if you're scoring at home.
If you're taking scene score.
And how would you describe Derry's dancing?
It kind of reminds me of, what's that, like the Russian dancing when you have that big hat on your head. This is very stereotypical. I apologize to any real Russians. But like you cross your hands in front of you, kick your legs out, that dance.
Yeah.
Except that he's holding green beer and his legs are going to the side. It's a strange dance.
Yeah, that's part of it. I mean, I was looking more for like a character. How would you characterize it, not how you would describe it?
Crazy?
Yeah.
Drunken?
Yeah.
Foolish?
Yeah.
Okay.
All of the above, yeah.
Also, legendary?
Yeah. So, Derry dancing, not to be confused with dirty dancing. This scene is all recounted by Squirrely Dan back at the produce stand with us watching what happened.
Yeah.
So he's there eating a corned beef and cabbage sandwich.
Which I believe we would call a Reuben.
Is that right? Yeah. Do you have corned beef? Do you put cabbage on a Reuben?
Well, you do sauerkraut, which is cabbage.
Yeah, I'm not versed in all things. I'll have to defer to you.
It's
all alien.
You also need some version of a Thousand Island dressing, which is essentially what they use. I mean, I love a Reuben.
Yeah.
Mm. Anyway.
Right. So there, he's there eating, and he sees the Letterkenny St. Perfect's Day mascot, Pitter Patty.
Yes. Could not have a better name.
Very apropos for us. Pitter Patty throws off his suit in disgust after, I forget, what was the impetus?
The Dijons are picking on him.
Yeah, right.
And he doesn't want any of this, so he throws his costume down.
Mm-hmm.
And Squirrely Dan sees his moment.
Yeah, and pounces.
Yeah.
So he appropriates the costume and assumes the responsibilities of Pitter Patty, which seems to just be about holding a plastic pot of golden lollipops.
Yes.
And pass them out to all the young girls.
I believe just the girls. Pretty sure they're only for the girls.
Yeah. That seemed to be what was.
And the young girls, and we don't mean young like kids. I mean, there's drinking. They're all like...
No, they're
in their 20s.
They're all adults, yeah.
But the young adult women seem to really... They're just fawning all over him.
Gravitating towards
him.
Yeah,
which is fun.
Right, yeah,
good
yeah.
for Squirrely Dan slash Pitter Patty.
Right.
Yeah. But...
Yes. Then an odd event occurs because he has a squares off with the mascot for the sandwich business.
Yep.
Who's come to drop off more sandwiches. More
right.
And he, his whole bearing is one of upset, I guess.
Yeah, he's a scowling mascot.
Scowling mascot, for no apparent reason.
No.
That's never divulged. But he's... Yeah, and he gives Squirrely Dan as Pitter Patty the stink eye and vice versa, and then they square off, and just as soon as he does, he has Pitter Patty down, does this Sammy the Sandwich or something?
Yeah, Sammy the Sandwich, that's his name.
Right?
Yeah.
But at that moment, then to the rescue comes...
Legendary!
jumps upon Sammy, the mascot sandwich man, and takes him down.
Yeah.
Right? So the first episode of...
of his legendariness.
Yeah, the establishment of his legendary status.
Yeah.
is him saving Pitter Patty, aka Squirrely Dan, from a beating. right? Next scene, scene six, cut back to the outside Ag Hall. Wayne outside having another dart. McMurray comes out, again, disgusted with the D-gens from upcountry.
Still pissed.
Yeah, maybe more pissed.
Yeah, definitely.
They have an interesting little aside when McMurray mentions that he's Scottish and Serbian, not Irish.
Yeah.
This leads Wayne to wonder why someone hasn't done a parody song to Rihanna's Disturbia, instead calling it In Serbia.
In Serbia.
No, apropos of absolutely nothing, had never had anything similar to this described or discussed yet in the whole series, as I recall.
No.
So it stands as a fascinating little silly aside.
Yeah.
Enjoyable.
I mean, he does, Wayne does periodically, and other characters, they'll randomly reference a song or an artist, but and that is usually in music. They don't do that necessarily with, like, authors or things like that, right? They do that about music or musicians. But for him to even know who Rihanna is so funny. And then, of course, McMurray's response, he knows, like, all the things about Rihanna and the song, and I think it's really fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And so this scene concludes then with Wayne
again
saying, well, you know, as long as most people are having fun, not down from everyone.
Right.
To most people. As long as most people are having fun, there's no reason to get poopy
pants. Ain't no reason to be a poopy pants.
Yep. Yeah. So, again, that sends McMurray off back into the building.
Right.
The next scene is a brief one. We see the hockey boys absolutely hammered.
So, yeah, they're just super drunk.
Just drunken it up amongst themselves.
Yeah.
Scene 8 goes back to produce stand, where they begin the recounting of the second stage of Legendary.
Yes, yes.
And this is Katie's version, or Katie's
story to tell.
Part of it, yeah, right? So she mentions that since St. Patrick's Day occurs in the middle of the Catholic holiday, or Catholic period.
Yeah, time period.
Of Lent, which demands of Catholics, good Christians they be, to give up something.
Give us something.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. But since St. Patrick's Day lies right in the middle of Lent, they're given a day off from that obligation.
Well, they're not, but Katie has decided she has.
Oh, she stated that as if that was gospel.
Oh, I took it as she just said seeing a St. Patrick's Day is in there.
No, she says expressly that the illusion was that the somehow it's Christian part of
it. I didn't interpret it that way, and I've not heard that before. So
I didn't either, but that's the way she plays it. As if this is that's exactly what you do. That Catholics are given the day off, or maybe Irish Catholics, for all I know.
Hmm.
So since she apparently had given up sex for Lent,
right?
Then she was now given license to get laid.
Yeah, she said, I went to get laid.
On St. Patrick's Day, right?
Yeah.
And so we see her walking into the hall. Pretty, how would you describe her?
I like that you shot to me to describe her. Good job. She is, she's dressed like a teen pop star from the early 2000s. In that she is wearing a half shirt and a very small plaid skirt. She's only missing the pigtails, and she could be Britney Spears. Oops, I did it again.
That's right. I hadn't made that connection.
Yeah. But she is essentially wearing, you know, a pretty typical Katie uniform wherein her body is on display. And she looks great. She walks in. She takes her coat off, unzips it, drops it on the floor, and essentially everyone in the Ag Hall gives her their attention. Men for, well, the majority of the men, for one reason, they want to get with her. The majority of the women, for a different reason, they're jealous. They're giving her some stink eye, right? Except for one.
She's giving her other eyes.
Giving her a different kind of eye.
Yeah. That person is?
Mrs. McMurray.
Right?
Yeah.
She's on the dance floor.
Yes, she is.
They lock eyes. And as soon as you know, then they're off off camera.
Yeah. Right? They are off camera. Yep. Yeah.
And yeah, we don't pick them up for quite a while, actually, down the road.
Yeah.
When they make their reappearance.
Mm-hmm.
The cut back to the produce stand. Squirrelly Dan mentions that in another version of This Is What I Appreciate About You.
Oh, right.
That she appreciates how she makes an entrance into mm-hmm. her room, and mm-hmm. she responds with the typical, or begins to respond with, oh, that's what you appreciate about, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, she's happy that, yeah, right. Yeah, it should be appreciated, she the way she makes an entrance. Yeah, yeah.
And meanwhile, Wayne still takes the opportunity to tell Squirrelly Dan to take about 25%
yep.
over there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Squirrelly Dan responds with, yeah, that seems fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
So we've got, so because of the way Katie enters,
right?
That's how we get to our next fight.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right.
She comes in, Jonesy and Riley finally decide that they're going to be security because the D-Gens have made eyes at Katie.
Right.
And they're coming at her.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's what we missed to say when the way that people viewed her as they came in.
Yeah.
So Jonesy and Riley get upset. They're like, no, 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 no. And then that's when the fight begins. And while the fight is happening is when Katie and Mrs. McMurray go off into the bathroom.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
There's a little scuffle between the hockey boys and a couple of the D-Gens.
And this is where Derry does his thing. He jumps on Sammy Sandwich again.
Sammy Sandwich again? At that point?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. And why was that again? Just because he's there, right? Just because.
Yeah, Sammy Sandwich was just, I think he was like pissed. It seems like even though he's of the town, he doesn't seem to like the Hicks.
He just inspires ire in everyone,
perhaps, yeah, right? Because he's a scowler.
Yeah, he's a bit of a poopy pants.
Yeah. Yeah, and so so then that's when we get so that's all happening, and then but what's funny is that while the fight is happening, you have that in the background, but then that's when Katie and Mrs. McMurray are making eyes at each other.
Right.
So, which is, I feel like a thing that happens in other scenes where you see Katie making suggestive looks, making sort of plans for some type of sexual escapade in the foreground, while in the background, you're seeing the physical fight of something go off.
Yeah, right. That's a good point that you see that repeatedly used as a mechanism
in the
process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. I forgot that part about the fight being the foreground.
Yeah, that's how we get to the second round of legendariness.
Right. Yeah, because then he comes in and takes down the sandwich guy again. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next scene is again outside the hall, and I also got this backwards because this is the third time that we see Wayne out having a dart,
mm-hmm.
and McMurray coming out. And this is when we actually have the in Serbia Disturbia discussion,
yes,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
But the third time around, this one is when McMurray's all the more inflamed, all the more upset about it, and he recounts to Wayne what the D-Gens are up to and how problematic it is. And Wayne's responds again, well, as long as everybody's having fun, it's no reason to blah, blah, blah. And McMurray says, no, not everyone is. Well, you know, most people are still having fun, blah, blah, blah. No, not even. And apparently no one's having fun, according to McMurray. So then Wayne responds with, then I shall be a poopy man.
Yes, and drive the snakes out of Letterkenny.
Yeah, so they adopt the metaphor of St. Patrick's.
He shall doing be St. Patrick.
Doing the work of St. Patrick's by getting, clearing the snakes, a.k.a. the D-Gens, from upcountry out of the Ag Hall. And they go back into the building.
Yep.
Scene 11. And they do just that, right?
Yeah, they go in and have themselves a nice old fight.
Little Donnybrook.
Get rid of the... Yes, a little Donnybrook.
They get the Hicks involved, or get the hockey boys involved. Mm-hmm. They get Legendary by their side, and they clean house. And that is that, right? That whole scene wraps up quite neatly. And
there's something that I observed about McMurray's hair that I wanted to ask you about.
Okay.
Do you recall the styling of his hair? The cut of it. Not the style, but the cut.
No, not really. It didn't stand out.
So sheared on the sides. Not shaved.
Yeah.
Shaved on the sides. And then his curly hair is kind of come... It's almost like a mullet, but not.
Yeah, right.
So today, when looking at him walk into the Ag Hall about to do St. Paddy's Day... Letterkenny style. I have the thought that is that what we would call the Mahomes haircut?
are you hypothesizing that he created the Mahomes?
I think I am. I think I'm saying that he is the originator of what we call the Mahomes haircut.
Yeah, right.
Which but is actually
all the rage now. Among
seriously, people. So many young 20-something boys have this haircut.
Yeah, they do.
It's it's fine. I know it's a phase, and we'll all get through it. But I also think that it's important for us as a society, as a community at large, to recognize that this is actually the McMurray.
Yeah, that would be an interesting campaign to get together. You know, I assume this predates Mahomes, at least his rise
it's
to
got
prominence.
To, right? Because if this is season 2, what was season 17, 18?
Yeah, I think it started in 17, 18, yeah. So, yeah, but that's about when Mahomes was coming on the scene. You know, he'd been in college, fairly prominent in college, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know if he had that haircut then.
No, but... I don't either. Yeah, that's true. You know, that might be a latter day development in the overall arc of the Mahomesiness. But yeah, I think that's an intriguing hypothesis. Yeah, this season was 17, ended in 17, so they were started in 16. So. Yeah, it's entirely possible that, you know, he saw this on Canadian TV at one point, did Mahomes, and he was like, wow, that interesting white man playing a farmer.
Just really, really liking.
Really doing cutting edge tonsorial work.
Yes.
And he was like, I got to have that. Make it so.
Yeah.
And next, you know, he's broadcasting it far and wide, and it's being adopted by every... what's
young
Gen Zers? Yeah. Would you Gen Zers?
I don't know what gen they call themselves.
Yeah.
Are they Gen Zers?
I don't know. It's hard to keep up with it. They create a new generation every year and a half, it seems like, so you can't.
Yeah.
It's hard to keep up. But yeah, that's a good interesting.
I mean, I don't know.
Interesting
and,
hypothesis.
And it was
yeah.
a, you know, it's a short look at his hair. I did not do a deep dive and get a look at make you pause and look at it. But oh, look, you've got a right?
No, you described it accurate. I pulled up an image. She's,
okay.
No, it's
and
it's
but it is kind of longer in the back, like a mullet. There, which Mahomes doesn't do that. So
no, that would be
just a mullet.
That would be a contradiction to what you see amongst the Mahomesies.
Yeah.
Mahomies.
No, you get no points for that.
come on. It was just lying right there. I just happen to be the one who picked it up.
So, yeah, that was, I needed to point that out.
I appreciate that sort of insight that you bring.
Once in a while.
I wouldn't have.
It's not that. A hound dog candle, it's a Mahomes haircut.
Right? that's why we keep you around.
Yeah.
You got that kind of, that kind of ability to pick out those details that otherwise get lost upon the rest of us. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's kind of the climax in some respects, or is it? Because.
Oh, that's right.
Speaking of climaxes.
Oh. Katie and Mrs. McMurray.
Come toddling out of the women's bathroom.
Uh-huh.
And a little bit disheveled, you might say. But the real smoking gun in the whole equation is the fact that...
Well, there are two, if you ask me. So you tell me, what's the smoking gun?
Oh, that they're each wearing what the other had previously worn.
Yes, okay. They have switched shirts.
Yeah.
So. Oh, yeah, whole outfits. No, whole outfit.
Is it? What? I don't know if they had switched bottoms, but they definitely switched tops.
They definitely switched tops.
Yeah, which, you know, means at least they got, you know, what, second base or something.
Yeah, good for them. Right? Yeah.
And the makeup is.
And then the makeup, smeared. Yes. Yeah. That, okay, that I didn't know which one you were.
Yeah. I mean, those are the two. I didn't know if you had a third one. You're like referring to something more. No. Something more.
They didn't get matching tattoos.
Wouldn't pick up on it as a guy or something. You know, if they were, I don't know. Yeah, matching tattoos. That's a good one. So, scene 12, we cut back to the produce stand. You are legendary because
he's
three fights and three victories in the course of an evening, which lasted all night.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
There's this scene at the produce stand, which is the last. You see this little aside.
Yeah.
That we still have yet to.
We haven't had time
to process it, and certainly didn't understand it in the moment. But we've probably got to address it, right? Because they're talking about the D-gens.
I guess, yeah.
They're talking about the D-gens and how Wayne hypothesizes that even though they whooped them this time, this wouldn't be the last that they see of them.
They'll be back.
Another act of foreshadowing, as they've done previously in prior episodes. Mm-hmm. See the beginning of season 2 when he talks about this being 6 weeks
of love.
Yeah. this one is foreshadowing the fact that the themes of D-gens from upcountry is just beginning.
Yes, yeah.
Right? And this prompts Derry inexplicably to yell the top of his voice that the
door's always open.
Yeah, door's wide open. And immediately Squirrelly Dan responds with door's always open.
Yeah.
Just and you hypothesize, I wouldn't doubt if you're absolutely correct, it's got to be a reference to some pre-existing property.
There's something. Yeah. It's an inside joke with either all of Canada or just them on the set.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's clearly something.
Yeah.
And we just don't understand what the reference is. Yeah.
Yeah. It's.
Yeah. I mean, we understand that they're saying, you know, the door is always open for a fight, you know.
Yeah.
But the way they do it.
Yeah.
Feels like it's a reference to something, and we don't know what that is.
Utterly inexplicable.
Yeah.
Utterly inexplicable.
And you know what? I'm not mad. I like it's not for us to know, right? Not every joke is for everyone.
Yeah. No. Yeah. There's place for that sort of enigmatic activity to leave us wondering, or you know, provide maybe somewhere down the line it'll register or it'll be referenced. Yeah.
Maybe
again.
they'll play it out for us later.
Yeah, so then they're off for breakfast. But
Chorin first.
Yep, not till after Chorin, right? So Katie gets up to make Caesars for him while the boys go off to go Chorin. Mm-hmm. But this affords Squirrelly Dan the opportunity to pause for a moment at the produce stand as everyone else leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Put on his cap.
His pitter patty hat.
Yeah, what do you call those? It's a form of a top hat, but I wonder if it has a specific name as it's...
Yeah, I don't know. I just always like associate it, just like a St. Patrick's Day hat is almost just what I call it.
Yeah.
Or a leprechaun hat.
Yeah, I guess it's definitely associated with leprechauniness.
Yeah, I've got a few of them in my St. Patrick's Day box of costumes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Since you broached that subject.
Yeah.
You have a box.
Yeah.
For St. Patrick's Day.
You didn't know this? Yeah, I've got one and Megan's got one.
I assume you... I'm not startled by it.
But you didn't know? I've probably hid this from you.
Unnerved. Yeah, no.
It's got everything from... I mean, really head to toe. Because St. Patrick's Day is a big deal in Pittsburgh also. And when I say big deal, I mean it's just a huge party. And so everyone, you know... goes out and about and gets shit-faced, kind of like what happens at the Ag Hall, except it plays out across the whole city. And my friend Megan and I have gone time and time again to enjoy the shit-facery. And Megan is Irish. She takes it very seriously. And so as her best friend, I also take it seriously. And so over the years, I have gathered my own box of St. Patrick's Day swag. So, you know, hair bows, earrings, sunglasses, hats, variety of options for all of those, t-shirt, sweatshirt, zip up, leggings, few pairs of socks, lots of jewelry, few boas, no shoes.
Okay.
That I do not have.
Seems like an oversight that needs to be remedied. I'd recommend some Kelty green Crocs.
Oh, they'd be comfy.
Aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe a little support. You wouldn't want to be on your feet for too long in them.
No.
But, yeah, so then that also demands a follow-up question.
Mm-hmm.
How many holiday boxes do you have?
Oh, you know, that's a really good question. I mean, I have a holiday box for every holiday, but most of those are filled with decorations for the house. This is the only one that's filled with decorations
for the body.
For me.
And you say all the holidays, so we're encompassing what, Hindu holidays?
No, you know what? I'm sorry. It's a very Christocentric.
Okay.
No, all of the Western Christian holidays, and some of the made up ones. So you know, starting from the beginning of the year, we're gonna start with I have a Valentine's Day box, which I don't usually get around to taking the decorations for that out of that box and up around the house. I got that. And then we go to St. Patrick's Day, which, like I said, not a lot of decorations for the house for that. Then we get to Easter. I like a good bunny decoration. I don't have anything for 4th of July. I know I'm not a real American. I do have a lot of just summer activity decoration boxes.
Yeah.
There are a few of those. And then we get to Christmas.
Okay.
Well, no. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Whoa.
I know, right?
Whoa.
Yeah.
I skipped Halloween.
Oh, I thought you meant Arbor Day.
I should get myself an Arbor Day box of decorations.
Yeah.
No, Halloween, I have a ton of Halloween decorations. I look forward to the day that I will be able to host another Halloween party. And I also have Thanksgiving Day decorations.
Okay.
And then Christmas.
Okay.
So, if I was really on it, I would have that stuff out every month. Partially out of laziness and partially because it's too much for any other person who's in this home with me to deal with the putting up of all of those decorations and taking them down. So sometimes they just sit in their boxes.
She's talking about you, Big Shoots.
Yeah, Dwight thinks it's the dog. That's the problem.
Big Shoots has joined us. He wanted to be involved.
Yeah.
But he's shy. He hasn't had a chance to contribute much. But no. Felt
he's like getting ready.
He
wanted to be a part of it.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the strong silent type.
He is the strong silent type.
Yep. So based on that, from our preceding discussion, I mean, did you have anything else that stood out to you about the episode? Learn anything out that you should?
No, I mean, just that probably I could go to Letterkenny and celebrate St. Patrick's Day the way I do here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good to know you.
Yeah.
Get some sort of these sort of cross-national, cross-cultural events that,
yeah,
you know, that afford us some semblance of connectivity.
How about you? What stood out to you? You know,
not a lot, actually, to mirror your point.
Yeah.
There's, you know, the introduction of the DJs from upcountry is,
right,
as we already noted, is a recurring theme that will continue to bear fruit as we go forward. We noted that this is the last episode that Devin, the skid,
Yeah.
Appears.
It's our last Devin episode.
Yeah, right. Yeah. He doesn't have anything to say in this episode.
Not much of a send-off, but that's okay. Maybe at that point they didn't know. Well, they probably would have known at that point if they filmed it between the seasons. They probably knew he wasn't coming back.
Yeah, hard to say.
He was all about 19-2 at that point. Or no. That timing is different.
Yeah, I think this is, yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, he was.
We'll give you an update on 19-2 next time.
We haven't been keeping up on that nearly as much.
Mm-hmm.
Full disclosure, I gave up on it, but then Christy wouldn't let me quit.
No, you can't quit 19-2.
So I'm back in.
Yeah.
Just when I thought I was out.
Pull me back in.
Yeah. And so, we'll give you some updates on that. But yeah, besides that, you know, it was... I think you soured a little bit on the episode by the end of it.
I did. I actually enjoyed it more the first time we watched it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, it's a one-off. And I feel like for them, if they're filming this between seasons, they're probably a little bit more loosey-goosey, let's have some fun and film this episode. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, nothing wrong with that. So.
No,
it's good. And
Yeah.
We learn about Katie.
Right.
We learned that, you know, that she doesn't have a preference for men over women.
Yeah.
And we learned that Squirrely Dan really loves Pitter Patty.
And just really enjoyed doing it. In fact, that it was a culmination of a lifelong dream.
Yeah, I believe that's what he said.
Yeah, it works out.
And
I
think I would enjoy being a mascot.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, I wouldn't want to wear some, like, fuzzy costume where you can't breathe or see. That's not what I would want.
You wouldn't
want
to be Steely McBeam.
I would not want to be Steely McBeam. And in case you don't know, that is the Pittsburgh Steelers mascot, which is the dumbest mascot on the face of this earth.
I assume the most Pittsburghers think that. Or
they've got to. I don't think you can be a real Pittsburgher and actually like Steely McBeam. Although people post pictures with him. I don't know. Yeah. I don't think you can... I don't know. I don't like him. He's dumb. I hate it. Moving on.
What's the Penguins mascot's name? Does he have
a name? Oh, he does. He's just a penguin, obviously. But,
Don't be so dismissive.
No, I just wanted to make sure nobody thought we had, like, a Ice Cubey McCube person.
I'm having this aside. So dismissive. Such an anti-animalist, isn't she? I'm saying that to Big Shoots.
He's talking to Big Shoots.
Big Shoots and I are having a sidebar.
Sidebar.
Important. I know Mom still loves you, but you have to understand. She sometimes, like, maybe it's just anti-bird. Who knows? But anyway.
I'm not anti-bird. I love birds.
Yeah.
But I just didn't want the public to think that we have two stupid mascots. We've just got the one. I really like our other two. I don't know the name of the Penguins mascot. I feel like I should because they say it at the games when you're there.
It's
like a two-syllable, like Penny the Penguin or something.
Oh.
Pucky or it's not.
Yeah,
Pucky.
That's what I was thinking.
It's not Pucky. It should be Mario. Let's be clear.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah,
Mario. Right?
But I'm sure it's not.
For the Mario Kart, the game?
Yeah, for Mario Kart. Not for Mario.
Yeah, I looked it up, and it's Penguin Pete.
Penguin Pete, huh?
Penguin Pete, yep.
Wonder who he's named after.
Right? Oh, the history of penguins mascots. Sorry, that was an antiquated one.
Oh, I didn't think...
Pittsburgh Pete is actually a penguin in the Pittsburgh Zoo.
Oh.
He is an Ecuadorian-born penguin on loan from the Pittsburgh Zoo.
Oh!
Yeah.
Okay.
So he's actually a penguin that they have.
Okay.
But the fuzzy one?
Yeah, the mascot? Oh, Fuzzy?
No.
No, what's his name?
It's worse. Iceberg.
That's it. Iceberg.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't hate it. I don't hate it.
It's better than Steely McBeam.
Yeah. So, yeah, you wouldn't want to be Steely McBeam or Iceberg.
No.
But what kind of mascot would you want to be?
I would want to be a mascot the way Squirrely Dan, that type of mascot, where it's still you. You just basically get to dress up and, like, give people things. And then you are the receiver of their mirth.
I see.
And you are the giver of your own mirth. And that doesn't make sense, but it doesn't matter. Just walk past it.
Right. So you're not going to be the San Diego Chicken or the Philly Fanatic.
No, I'm not going to be that weird thing that they have on the Phillies team.
Yeah, that's the Philly Fanatic.
Okay,
the,
and you know what? The
green thing.
Oh, God, that thing is so gross. Okay, so actually, he's the worst mascot on the face of the planet.
Yeah.
Steely McBeam, number two.
I could get behind that statement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know how we got into mascots.
This has been Mascot Talk.
Yeah, with Christine Dwight.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So, well, I guess that wraps up.
Oh, I think we better.
We've done 55 minutes.
Oh, my gosh, on one little episode.
Hey, we're feeling it.
Wow. I apologize if we blathered too much.
Yeah, I'm not going to apologize. You're welcome.
All right. You're right. That's it. You're welcome, guys.
And if we blather too much, it's all out of love.
It is, yeah, for all of the things.
Yeah. So, yeah. All righty then. Well, we will see you or hear you or be heard by you the next time.
We will talk to you.
That's a good.
The next time we do this.
That's a gooder way to put it. I like how
Those words.
I like how you talk. The next time we record, when we turn our attention to season 3.
Yes.
All right, now.
All right. Bye, everyone.
See you.